Okay, welcome back after lunch, everybody. Thanks for coming this afternoon. So today, we're going to be talking about Office 365 Identity Federation and look at some of the technologies behind that. I'm joined by Paul Black from Resolution IT, who's a specialist in that area. He's going to be helping me out today with the presentation. He's going to bring some great field experience. He's done a lot of implementations with some large enterprises, so he's got a wealth of knowledge. So, during the presentation, feel free to ask questions as we're going through, and let's learn some new stuff. So the session objectives today really look at the provisioning and synchronization engine behind the cloud services and Office 365, which is clearly one of those cloud services. Look at the provisioning and synchronization options. So I think last year I did a similar session, and we're talking about the ability to synchronize using the DirSync product and things like that. And at that time, we only supported single forest scenarios. So we're now moving beyond that. So we're going to talk about how you can support multiple forests and the different options to do that today. Some of the technology we're going to be talking about is available today. Some of it is going to be released relatively soon. So we'll let you know when things are available and aren't available as we're going through the session. So really what we want you to walk away with are when to use particular options in DirSync and why to use those things. And when you're thinking about doing deployments, what are the key architectural considerations behind that? One of the fundamental things that you have to get right when you're implementing any of these cloud services is your identity platform. Absolutely critical to the success of this stuff. And Paul will start talking about some of the reasons why. But all the services like SharePoint and Link and Exchange all require specific attributes to make them work well and also to make them very usable. So getting that identity platform right is absolutely key. So we've changed the name. I think a lot of you would think of the online or the current directory services and the online AD service. We've actually changed that to where we will be renaming that, and it's available now, and it's called the Windows Azure Active Directory platform. So it's the same service, it's a rebranded thing, it's got a much expanded role in integrating into all our other cloud services. So this service alone can be used for the Office 365 set of products and services. It can be also used for the Azure products and services. And it can be used for applications that you guys write or customers write that are hosted in the Azure platform as well. So it's a really extensible service, and it's really the foundation to all of our cloud services and for custom developed apps as well. So there's a couple of names there. Windows Azure AD, you'll hear it, or just AAD, and you'll start seeing all the products and references. So if you start hearing references about that, if you're an Office 365 customer, it doesn't mean that you've all of a sudden purchased an Azure service, but we've rebranded the existing identity platform to that. So what does that actually mean? From a tools perspective, we'll be renaming things like the DirSync product to the Windows Azure Directory Sync tool. There'll be some stuff coming out around FIM, so there'll be a specific connector into the service, which we'll talk about in more detail later, that's going to help you support multi-forest scenarios, and that'll be called the Active Directory Connector for FIM and things like that. There's common pieces to the platform. So the MSODS is common, so the directory service is common across all those platforms. And when you're looking at ADFS and things like that, the S2S, the org ID is shared across that platform as well. So what does that actually mean? When you're looking at the service, really the Azure AD is there to provide a foundation for the identity platform for any cloud app. So today we support the apps like, which way am I going? SharePoint, Exchange Link, CRM Online, Intune, and some of the Azure all of the Azure applications as well that sit in there. So the infrastructure as a service pieces and the platform as a service pieces as well. So you can see that the model that we're moving to is really an extensible platform so that Microsoft has the ability to add other services into that platform, and that our customers are already ready to consume those things. So it's an easy way to move forward that way. So we like to think of it really as, you know, the Azure AD is the key to the service, and the cloud apps are really the stuff that provides the value there. So when we think about identity management, there's really two key concepts that you need to think about and get right. And the first one is provisioning and synchronization, or the second one is synchronization. And they really are two different things. Provisioning is where you're creating the objects from a source of truth, and then you're provisioning some type of service. So you may be provisioning an Exchange account and adding a license to that. The synchronization aspect of this solution is really keeping all those things up to date based on the source of truth. So if I update my on-premise Active Directory from an SAP HR portal, for example, and I update, you know, my job title or something like that, I need that synchronization engine to make sure that all the services that rely on that have that same information propagated to it. So there's really two aspects to, you know, the identity stack there. So the types of options that you have when you're looking at directory synchronization, you know, these three. So the first one is manual. So you would go to, you know, the online portal, manually create the users, type in the username detail and all that kind of thing, and then, you know, create that user. You have the option of doing a bulk import of that using a CSV file, but, you know, that's how you do it. And you typically do that for small organizations or a small group of users. So it's a manual process, and if you're doing it for thousands and thousands of users, it's really too time-consuming to look at it that way. One of the challenges of that type of solution is that there's no synchronization layer there. So if the user details change, then you have to go back in there and manually update those details as well. And secondly, you don't have control over as many attributes. So if you start using some of the other options, you can get a lot deeper in the type of attributes and settings that you can set. So really, when you're looking at the manual thing, the only thing that you can do and set are the options that are exposed through the admin portal there. The second option is really for organizations that, you know, want some automation in place, so they'll look at scripting that, and they'll be using, you know, today PowerShell commandlets, which enable you to, you know, write scripts and then automatically connect into the service and then create objects. So you can start to batch that. You could read off a source AD and write a script that goes through, you know, thousands of users and creates those objects. We're just about to introduce another capability, which is the Graph API, which is part of the Azure Active Directory service. And that lets you move away from the PowerShell capability and write applications that directly provision users into the service using an API, so programmatically doing that. That's available in developer preview at the moment, so if you want to have a look at that and you have a need for that, then, you know, it's available now. And, you know, some of the reasons why you may do that, you may not be, you know, your source of truth within your organization may not be Active Directory, it may be some other type of directory. So using the Graph API, I can read off an E directory or an Oracle database or a SQL database or something like that, and then start provisioning users that way into the service. Again, unless you keep rerunning those scripts, the attributes, because there's no synchronization layer there, or no automated synchronization layer, unless you actually rerun those scripts, then there's a chance that you don't have full consistency. So you need to, you know, if you're doing a scripting process, you need to start thinking about how you manage that update process as well. And finally, the last way is fully automated. So most people are familiar with that. Who in the room are Office 365 customers? Just give me a feeling. Nearly everyone, that's great. So, you know, pretty much everyone's familiar with DirSync. So that's available today. And, you know, that's an automated way. You can clearly do high volume transactions. It updates every 3 hours. So if I make a change in my on-premise Active Directory, those attributes get propagated through, so everything remains in the frame. You'll see there the second method there from an automated perspective is moving away from DirSync. So if you've already got a FIM forefront identity management environment in place, then you can start implementing a connector that we're going to release and looking at managing multiple forests. But we'll talk about more detail on that, but that'll be a second method from the automated perspective. So these are some examples. Everyone's seen the admin page, so you can do that. You can use PowerShell. So one of the advantages of descriptable method is that you get a deeper level of attribute, and you can see from the Graph API, you know, that's a bit of, what kind of code is that? C code, I think. Yeah. Sorry? Okay. You can see that you can get it into a deep level of attribute there and really customize the way that you manage that process. And then everyone's familiar with the DirSync process, and you can see there's a little icon on the right hand there that indicates that the user has been synced from the from the on-premise Active Directory, and that the in effect, the on-premise Active Directory is a source of truth. And if you want to update that user, you need to update it in the on-premise Active Directory and wait for the next sync to go through. We'll talk about that in a little bit more detail later. So I'm going to hand over to Paul now to talk about some more things.
Thank you. Okay, so DirSync is the sort of your first stage. So DirSync you deploy if you want to go off Speakers 5, if you want to deploy DirSync. DirSync sort of gets ready to create your environment and modify it and sync it into the Office 365 directory, which is now AAD or 0AD. To be able to use single sign-on, you must go DirSync. You can script, like Toby has said, you can script using PowerShell, but the problem with using PowerShell that we find is that Microsoft monitors your DirSync. DirSync will actually tell you if you're not syncing. You know, every 24 hours, it'll send you, we haven't seen you for 24 hours, you want to check your configuration. PowerShell, you don't have that. So with DirSync, it's a much better solution. PowerShell finds it quite good for if you want to actually, might not have an AD on-premise or you're not using AD for your directory services. And it's really the first stage to move on. So looking at the architecture of DirSync and Office 365, so you have the Azure AD, which is previously Office 365 directory services. So with the directory service in the cloud there, you've got all your, I can hardly even see that screen. So the way it works is that I'll go to the next one. So no integration, first step, no integration. So if you want to go create all your users, you create them in the portal. So this is no DirSync, no single sign-on. This is mainly for SMBs who want to go have minimal infrastructure on site, and they just want to actually create their Active Directory in the cloud. So that means it's all managed and done in the cloud. Second option is directory data only. So this is using DirSync. So this is we find normally small clients who've got infrastructure on-premise, and they'll just deploy DirSync, and they want to sync the AD up into the cloud. So how many people are on Office 365 already? Or actually, who's not on Office 365 already? Right, okay. I'll just give you a quick overview of DirSync. So DirSync is very, very easy to actually set up and configure. If you want to just flip it number two. So I've already got DirSync already installed in this box. We'll just go for the configuration wizard, which is the same process. You've installed DirSync, you come with the configuration wizard.
So for those customers that are not Office 365, DirSync is effectively an appliance. You just install it to a 64-bit Windows server. And to actually get access to that, you go to the Office 365 portal. There's a link there, you download it, and it just runs a wizard. And then you get to this point, basically.
Now, my lab environment is a federated environment, so I'm putting my on-premise AD credentials in here. If you weren't going ADFS or single sign-on, you'd put an online services ID in here. The next day, what have we got here? Sorry, I've just put that in wrong. So just you've got to put in, obviously, the full email address or UPN. So that goes and connects the online services. And the next step will ask me for on-premise username and password. And the on-premise AD account's got to be an enterprise admin. It doesn't use that account to actually use the service. What it does is use that account and goes and creates its own service accounts. Now, I've got a full coexistence environment here. So if you've got Exchange 2010 on-premise, and you want to use rich coexistence, so you have your exchange federated with the online 365 exchange, I'll tick that option. So I've got that, so I'll tick that. Now, the difference here between, and why Dersync asks for this, is that if you haven't got exchange coexistence and you're running Dersync by itself, it's one-way synchronization. When you use exchange hybrid configuration, they actually can write back, I think it's 7 attributes back into your AD. So it's attributes like legacy proxy addresses for coexistence, as an online archive, so you can have like a mailbox on-premise and have the online archive in Exchange Online. So these are the ones it writes back into your AD.
Yeah, those attributes that are used for write-back are used so that if you move people between on-premise and online and vice versa, that the experience to the end user is seamless. So there's certain attributes that we like to write back. From a security perspective, we only, as we're installing this Dersync appliance, the enterprise admin, we actually give the user account that you're creating permissions to only those certain 7 attributes. So it becomes a fully auditable activity as well. And we can detail if you need to, and they're clearly detailed what those 7 attributes are.
Yep. And then my next step is synchronize. So I click finish, it'll go ahead and synchronize my directory. Now before you even run this, people who aren't Office 365, there's a deployment readiness tool. Very important you run this before you even look at Dersync. Previously there was an object limit of 20,000 objects you could sync. When you hit the 20,000, you couldn't sync any more accounts. Now it's now been lifted to 50,000. I had customers who wouldn't run it, or who may have been around about the 18,000, 19,000, very close to 20,000, and they actually weren't running it every 6 months and then hit the 20,000 object limit. And also the deployment readiness tool will actually go through and look at your links, anything to do with your AD accounts that might have duplicate proxy names, probably external contacts, it might be some illegal characters in some accounts. A common one we find is when people have names like Joe Blog Senior, and they might have a dot at the end. So you can't have a Joe dot senior dot at their domain name. So there's a few legal characters to pick up. So before you even touch Dersync, run that deployment readiness tool. You just run it on any computer network. It takes about, depending on how big your AD is, maybe around about 10 minutes to run. Gives you a full report and also tells you what's wrong or what needs to be fixed, and also the support articles how to fix that.
So just on that 20,000, now 50,000 user or an object limit, that's not a hard limit for the tenant size. So that's just a limit for the initial provisioning of the tenant. So if you have more than 50,000 objects in your Active Directory, you run that the readiness tool, get the output of that, and actually raise a service request within the portal. And once you raise that request and add that report, the service guys will come back and tell you that it's been approved to provision. So we just need to know if there's any large provisioning or customers that are provisioning large users, so that we can ensure that we provide a consistent level of service across all of our customers.
Now, as Toby mentioned, Dersync's run every 3 hours. You can actually run a manual Dersync. So if you look in the installation directory, you've actually got a Dersync config shell there. Double click that, runs at PowerShell. You can do a start MS online coexistence sync, press enter, runs in manual Dersync. So you actually can run that outside of those 3 hour scheduled runs. Now the only thing is Microsoft do check how often customers are actually syncing. They actually reports have done weekly. They'll check to see, are you writing data every 3 hours? Are you writing a lot of data? They'll contact you, they'll talk to you. Microsoft are continually developing the Dersync tool. There's been a change just recently. 32 bits being removed from the portal. It's only 64 bit now. So Microsoft are redeveloping and putting more into Dersync. So they actually do monitor it. Go back to number one. So that's the second option of just using Dersync only. The third option is Dersync with single sign-on. So using ADFS. So ADFS will allow you to not just a password sync tool. Some people get it confused with I can use the same password. It's actually your identity is purely on-prem. So Office 365 will connect to your AD to authenticate you. So the way that works is that you'll have ADFS proxy in your DMZ, and you'll have an ADFS server sitting in your corporate network. So highly suggested to have a high availability infrastructure. You want at least a minimum of 2 sites for this, because a lot of people move to the cloud purely for the fact that they want to take all that management overhead and high availability and give it to Microsoft. I've had some clients think they can run ADFS just at one site, one proxy, one ADFS server. You kind of defeat the purpose of not having a highly available deployment, you're going to have a single point of failure on those servers. So you want to deploy a farm. So in all the help documentation and in the portal, you'll find there's full document details on actually how to do a high availability deployment. Just to give an example of ADFS.
Put it on.
Yeah, put it on.
So just to further clarify the process of ADFS. So we basically, to use ADFS, you need to, and Paul will go through this in a second in a little bit of detail, but you need to verify a domain within your online tenant, which is a routable domain. So it has to be something like, you know, Microsoft.com, which is, you know, available on the internet so that I can route to that. What, in effect, what you're doing is setting up a trust relationship between Microsoft.com and the ADFS servers on premise. And, you know, so once you've done that and registering, you know, where the source is that's going to complete the authentication. Once you've got that trust in place, when I try to access a service in the online space, in the Office 365 space, I actually type in, you know, toby.knight@microsoft.com, for instance, and the Office service, or the AD Azure service, recognises that there's a trust in place for the Microsoft.com namespace. It then identifies how to complete that authentication request and redirects that request back to the ADFS infrastructure on-premise. And then that ADFS infrastructure authenticates that user against the user account within your Active Directory domain. So you can see that because that handoff happens where the authentication actually happens on-premise, the ADFS infrastructure becomes critical that it needs to be highly available.
So that's a quick example of what Toby's talking about. Microsoft knows that your domain is federated, so when I go type in my full user ID here, it knows my domain's federated. I go sign at resolutionlab.com.au, that will point me back to my ADFS proxies on site, and that's where I'll sign in. So this is a non-domain joined PC into our lab environment. So this is on a corp network, this is in my lab environment, is completely separate. If you're on the network already, you automatically authenticate to your terminal ADFS service, no prompt. But this is like a kiosk PC going into in the environment. So I actually log in here. And I got a million eyes watching me, so I'm all typing the best today.
And because you're hitting a web service here, this gives you the ability to implement two-factor authentication. So for instance, if I was using secure ID tokens or something like that, I could have that second form of authentication there as an external user.
So the ADFS log proxy page, yeah, you can customize RSA tokens, Microsoft use smart cards on their ADFS. So I'm logging the portal now, authenticating through my ADFS. So I'll probably just give a background demo on ADFS configuration as well. Who's using Office 365 and not using ADFS? Okay,
yeah.
I've got just a single server farm set up at the moment, so I'll just take you through the configuration wizard. And to note as well, so in 2008R2, there's an ADFS role. This is not the ADFS role that you install to run ADFS with Office 365. It's ADFS version 2. It's a downloadable from Microsoft. I get people installing the role, thinking that's the one you use. It's a separate download. Version 2 you need. So this is, I've installed ADFS on here. There's three hot fixes you also must install currently. Okay.
The other key thing there is, although there's an ADFS, Paul's got a single ADFS service, typically you'll have an ADFS server installed within your network, so inside your DMZ. Then at your DMZ, you'd have an ADFS proxy server, so you need a minimum of two servers to actually authenticate a user. Clearly, when you're looking at highly available infrastructure, you need to double that up and ideally host that on in a separate physical data center as well.
Yep. You can reverse proxy at the perimeter level, so you can use TMG F5. Then you must hit your proxy. So this is, I've already got a farm set up, so this is kind of adding to the farm. So I've already got, what I would be prompted here would be my federation name, so what my external address would be for my federation. I've just got STS for secure token services dot my domain. If you've got a proxy server, you need to put that in there as well. I hit next. Proxy for credentials into my AD. So that'll go and, join to the farm, but also run a configuration. So if this is a new ADFS deployment, it'd go, I'm going to configure this, this, and this. So I'd configure the IIS website for the proxy. I'd also have to put a secure certificate in, because this is already installed on the server. It knows it's already there. Otherwise, it asks you to select a SSL certificate.
We actually have a number of customers at the moment. I'm sure you guys are aware that we're just releasing the Azure infrastructure as a service. Which sounds silly.
Yeah.
However, we're working with a lot of customers that are actually hosting the redundant ADFS components in the Azure service. So, you know, if you've got a single physical data center, that's a great way to overcome that, you know, that barrier of having that redundant infrastructure.
And because I've already deployed AWS on here, I've already got IIS on there.
ADFS doesn't extend the schema.
So that was an internal ADFS. So on the proxy, very similar install. But when you first get presented for, when you first run, you install ADFS, you run the configuration wizard. It asks you, do you want to do an internal ADFS role or do you want to do a proxy? Okay, so that's why this screen's a bit different, because it knows it's a proxy server already and not an internal ADFS server. So on the proxy, what I'll do first, I'll go into IIS. Add my certificate in there already, ready to be to select. Come hit next, same thing, federation name. It's pretty much the same configuration. Ask me for my detail, we've seen this already. I put it in, click finish, and it sets it up. So it actually is quite a very easy install of ADFS. It's not as difficult as what, when you look for the Microsoft documentation, they're going for large and large scale deployment. So multiple ADFS servers. So ideally you want to have, you know, a farm of proxies and one in two locations. You want to have a farm of ADFS servers sitting in your AD network as well, just so you've got the high availability there. Because the last thing you want is that you move to the cloud, you want to have this high value infrastructure. So, because if your ADFS is down, you can't authenticate, means you don't get access to your email. All right, go back to one. So why use directory and single sign-on? So the advantage of using single sign-on, you get a single place for management. So you know a lot, so currently all your staff, all your IT staff are managing all your authentication on-premise, all your user accounts, groups, contacts, all on-premise. This stays the same. So actually, all, you can have your password policy still remain the same. So you have 3-month expiry, 6 months, 1 month expiry, that all still stays the same because it's hooking into your AD. Also with the support for single sign-on, so you can deploy ADFS using DirSync, which is shown here as well. It also gives you support for hybrid environments. So it allows you to use Exchange, you've got Exchange on-premise, preferably Service Pack 2. Service Pack 2 introduced the hybrid configuration wizard. Much easy process to do Exchange coexistence with Service Pack 2. Service Pack 1 was about a million single steps, which is an 80-page document from Microsoft. I don't know if anyone did a Service Pack 1 hybrid configuration. No? Yep, feel the pain? Yeah, yep. So Service Pack 2, a lot easier to do configuration. It is a schema update, so make sure all your ITIL processes are followed there. And also gives you the option to actually do full rich coexistence. So rich coexistence is free, busy lookup between the orgs. You get shared GAL. You can move mailboxes on-prem to Office 365 back again. And it's pretty much zero impact to the end user. So when you actually move a mail, it's a new hyper remote user move command. So you're moving a mailbox from your on-premise federated Exchange aligned to your Office 365 one. And it's zero impact to the user. So there's no OST resync. It's just they move to a new server. Also options for strong authentication. So you can use smart cards on your proxies, you can use on your ADFS proxies, and you can use RSA tokens or any other sort of multi-factor authentication you want to use. Does anyone use any two-factor authentication at the moment? At all into the environment? What are you guys using at the moment? Are you using it Office 5 or? Oh, okay, right. Yep. Okay. So a bit of a deep dive into the architecture. So on-prem, you have your DirSync, and you have your AD management agent, you have your Metaverse, all the objects come into, then you have the Office 365 management agent, which actually pushes it to Office 365 with zero AD. And then you also have your ADFS sitting on the other side of your AD. Then you have the online services side of things. So AWS front ends, that's been around for quite some time. So AWS front end will never ever try and retrieve data from the AD. So it's always pushed from your DirSync. Okay, DirSync will always push into there. And then from the AWS front ends, it actually puts into the workflow. So what the workflow actually does, it actually goes through what accounts that are coming in and does a data validation on them. Works out, okay, are these correct proxy addresses? Do I have any illegal characters? You know, do I have duplicate SMTP addresses coming through? And then once it's hit that workflow, it'll actually put it into the Office 365 directory. Now, Toby mentioned about the Graph API. That also sits on the side as well. So when that gets opened up, it'll give you a bit more sort of options to get your data into Azure AD. To note though, AWS front ends are not throttled. Graph APIs and PowerShell is. Okay, so that if you've got quite a large environment and you want to go down a PowerShell route, just let you know that is throttled. Okay? So with dersing as well, so if you are got 30,000-40,000 objects and you are going to do a dersing in your first one, you'll find that Microsoft does them in batches. So you'll find that it logically puts them into batches and syncs them through. So it might take 3, 4, 5 hours, but it doesn't actually go do them all at once and just hit the network. So the way that Office 365 have got that set up, it's kind of like a citizenship sort of starvation fairness sort of thing. So the last thing that Microsoft wants is someone doing a large import of their data into DirSync or into the online Azure AD and then affecting everyone else who's trying to sync up. So Microsoft sort of practically monitors that. They monitor how often you're DirSyncing and they'll work around that. And once it hits the Office 365 directory, or this really should be named Azure AD, then all your other product sets look into that. So Exchange, Link, and SharePoint. So that workflow is kind of like your last line of defense, because once it gets into the Azure AD directory, you want that data to be correct. You want it to be right. You don't want any mismatches. You don't want any issues with that data, because all the online services will actually hook into that. So it's got Exchange, Link, and SharePoint. CRM, Intune's got to be hooking into it. If you start writing apps for Azure, those apps can hook into the Azure AD as well. So it's really becoming kind of your cloud AD as such. Okay, so that's why the workflow is very important, to make sure your data is correct going into that environment. So life as a sync object. So when an object is created in the cloud, it is owned and managed in the cloud. So and that's normally done by the portal, so there's no DirSync, no ADFS, no power sharing. So actually managed and created in the cloud. So when an object is created by sync, it's owned by sync. So DirSync will push that AD object into Azure AD. Changes can only be made from on-premise AD, and there are some commands you can do in PowerShell. One on a DirSync object, pretty much you can remove it, or you can make changes. If you make changes though, the next DirSync will overwrite those changes. Okay, so it is owned and managed by DirSync, which means it's owned and managed by your on-premise AD. So when an object is created in the cloud but also exists on-prem, so we've had a few instances where we've taken on clients, they've already had Office 365, they may have done a manual import CSV and imported into Office 365. They want to go down the single sign-on route, well, we've got to deploy ADFS. So we've got objects in the cloud, managed by the cloud, owned in the cloud, but now we want to deploy DirSync. The way DirSync handles that is soft matches. It looks at the SMTP address of your on-premise AD user, so you've got to make sure you've got UPN added in there for your external domain, and make sure that their email address, the SMTP address, matches their org ID actually in the cloud. So as long as those match, DirSync will do a soft match, make sure it's correct. Okay, so very important. It actually runs quite well. We've done it quite a few in the last few months. It actually works really well. So as long as you do a bit of that planning beforehand, run the desktop readiness tool, because yeah, even though you've deployed, you sort of check, run it again in the environment again, make sure they're correct. So there is one sort of exception to that rule, like I said before. You can remove an MSL user or contact or group from Office 365, but it will be recreated again on-prem. When would you use this? Maybe when your safe match comes across and it didn't quite match an object right, and maybe you've got two accounts now sitting in Azure AD when you only got the one user account in AD. So remove it, fix up any attributes or any proxy addresses, SMTP addresses that may be incorrect, and then run your DirSync again. So the way the life of a synced object, so the sync tool, DirSync, will read your data on-prem, looks at all your data, and then it'll push it up to the AWS front ends. Their front ends will create the object in the online services directory. Obviously, goes through the workflow first, make sure it's all correct, make sure the data is all validated, make sure that there's no errors or any illegal characters, and push it through. And all the other services, pretty much like Exchange, Align, SharePoint, Link, will read from the online services directory. So all the data validation is done in the workflow, and also hooks into that environment. So choose your own sync adventure. So this is quite common. It's like now with just not one dirsync now, we've talked about a few options today. So we've got the single forest dirsync, which is probably where everyone is today. I don't know if anyone's using the FIM connector or anyone had a premium engagement for dirsync. Nope, so everyone's using single forest dirsync at the moment. Yep, okay, so that's pretty much the most common one. Single forest, single AD, running dirsync in the authentication forest. So the second one we also have is a multi-forest dirsync. So this is normally by premium engagement only for EA clients, where there's a special dirsync that actually can go and look in multi-forest to sync your actual, both two ADs up. Now, when you use a multi-forest dirsync, you want to make sure that users in this forest don't exist in this forest. The last thing you want is actually two of the accounts coming up, okay? So they want to be completely separate forest. Where do I see this? I see this in joint venture companies. It might be 50-50, especially in the resource sector. You'll see, you know, mining organizations, coal organizations have joint ventures for a project. That's when you use a multi-forest dirsync, okay? And it actually works out quite well, too, if you ever want to split. Normally in joint ventures, they do retire, or they may be, you know, equity companies might have, you know, multiple companies. Use a multi-forest, and you can split them off as well. And a third one is a new one, a zero AD connected with FIM. So this is, I don't know if any clients on this now, this is also by premium engagement. This is what allows you to have the multi-forest as well. Also going to be used for non-AD environments. So you see a lot of instances for schools might have AD for their staff, but they're not using any AD for their students. They might have a SQL backend where they manage their students in that, and it syncs into the student apps, and that's it. So this is getting sort of, because Microsoft have realized now, look, you know, we don't just have AD clients. Yes, there's everyone on AD, but the reality is they don't. Okay, some people still might be running Novell or Linux. Could be running anything. So Microsoft have realized this now and looking at redeveloping and on the cycles now, dirsync with the FIM connector to actually look and get those clients up into AD.
So just clarify a few things there. So the single forest sync is available today. Most customers are using that. The multi-forest dirsync applies. You'll see that there's two there. The second and the third option both refer to multiple forests. However, there's a slight difference. So the multi-forest dirsync appliance will be just a download. It's not released yet. It's going to be released soon. And that is for a unique, pretty standard multi-forest scenario where there's no object overlap. That's a really straightforward scenario. The Windows Azure directory connector can be installed and it'll be released again later to all customers, but it is available today via Microsoft services, and that's where you have multiple forests and a fairly complex multi-forest environment where you may have objects that are replicated in multiple forests, so you have object overlap and you need to do some, you know, more filtering around the directories when you're synchronizing. So just to clarify those things.
Yep. Second point there, you don't need to use single sign-on just because you sync, but you do need to sync to use single sign-on. So dirsync is a requirement for ADFS, use single sign-on. Now you can use PowerShell, so you can use PowerShell to go sync those org IDs and GUIDs and stuff for all those accounts and replicate and create those accounts, the same IDs on-premise into the cloud. But you run the risk of not doing it correctly and breaking your authentication for ADFS. I don't know of anyone who's done it, but it is possible. Like I said, the supported method is using dirsync. It is monitored and managed by Microsoft. They'll actually tell you when you're not syncing your objects, when you've got mismatches, you've got errors in your any accounts. The third point there, sync solution doesn't occur into single sign-on. So at the moment, I believe that only ADFS is a supported method. Toby, correct me if I'm wrong.
So ADFS today, so you'll see there a bit of a hint. So ADFS is supported today. We've been working on supporting other non-AD-based STSs for a while, an example there, Shib. So you'll see some announcements coming out, you know, over the next, short time around supported solutions from other vendors. So we're going through a certification process there now.
Okay, so pretty much going back on the last slide, choose your own sync. So single forest dirsync, which everyone's using quite now, single AD forest on-prem that contains all your data. Okay, the second one, multi-forest, which we talked about already, which obviously what Toby said, no overlapping data, so no user A doesn't exist in the other forest as well, very important. And then also the third one of using AAD connector. So Key point on that slide there at the very bottom is a non-AD directory services. So that is that will be coming. I believe that's only for Premier Engagement now as well.
So we can do this today with Premier Engagement. Or you can do it yourself, as I mentioned earlier, using scriptable solutions or PowerShell and things like that. You just need to really, you probably speak to the services guys, Microsoft guys, or one of our partners around what objects and attributes you need to configure there.
Yep. Okay, so when you look at multi-forest DirSync, people think, great, I'll use multi-forest, but the supported method for Exchange deployment in the past by Microsoft was an Exchange forest and a separate authentication forest. So the way you can get around that and still use possibly this single DirSync forest, you're actually looking at, go, right, so you've got your authentication sitting in one forest for users, then you've also got Exchange sitting in its own forest as well. Well, let's, and if, say your long-term goal is to decommission that Exchange forest completely, why run multi-forest? You don't need to. You can actually install, you can do a synchronization of your data from your Exchange, like GalSync or another synchronization tool to sync all those Exchange tributes into your authentication forest. Run, install DirSync in the authentication forest and also sync ADFS. That way you're not relying on having a, you know, any legacy, anything legacy to remove later on. So that, that way if you've got any forest now with just Exchange in it, you can actually completely remove that forest once you've actually deployed. So anyone running a separate forest now for Exchange at all? Not a resource forest? No? Good.
Yeah. So you've effectively, so you've got multiple forests already. You want to bring the users into a single forest, and then use that as the method. Yeah. So that's doable. So you would use something like FIM on the back end to synchronize all the objects up into that new forest, and you'd have to, you know, figure out how to deal with duplicates and all that, you know, standard identity stuff. But yeah, you could do that, and then do a single DirSync up into the forest. The other option is, you know, if that's your end state, that's great. But the other option is, you know, if you want to get moving really quickly, is to use the FIM-based solution, put that in the front end, and bring the forest together that way, and just replicate straight from FIM straight up to.
Oh, so use FIM straight.
You could do that as well, yeah. Yeah. So there's really two options, and it really becomes a conversation around what your desired end state is, and making that the easiest. You know, so it's a bigger conversation, but there's two possible approaches.
I suppose look at how you're getting all your users now in that one forest already, and you've just got a resource forest, or? Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. We're working through that scenario with a number of customers. I'm on the stand. I'll talk later, but I'm on the stand from 9 till 12 tomorrow as well. Yeah.
So one of the things as well is that at the moment, multiple Exchange organizations are not supported. I wouldn't be surprised if it does get supported later down the track, but at the moment, there's no information on it. It's not supported. So yeah, look at some replication or synchronization to actually get your users into the one org. Thanks, Toby.
Cheers. All right, so let's look at some of the core directory sync concepts. I think the first one there is source of authority, and that's a pretty basic concept, but I think it's probably the most important concept. We talked earlier that, you know, once the source of authority is defined, whether that's in the cloud or on-premise, that's the place where you need to make changes. And when you start looking at complicated identity management platforms, you know, the source of authority may be broken down into, you know, attributes within users, objects. So, for instance, you may be getting phone information and job title and all that kind of stuff from an SAP directory and, you know, pulling that into an Active Directory. So, you know, you actually want to make the change at the source of authority, which in that instance is SAP. So you really need to understand where the source of that data is coming from so that the replication can make sure that all that information is updated. And typically, well, if you do have that replication in place, if you make a change to a user's objects or a user object attribute in the wrong place, then it's just going to get overwritten the next time, you know, there's a synchronization process. So key to understand source of authority. The second key aspect is source anchor. So we talked about federation and those types of concepts, but federation works using the source anchor. So the source anchor is really what makes that user ID or the user object unique in our Azure Active Directory service. So when I create an object, provision a new user object, I'll actually take some attributes from that user, such as the Active Directory on-premise GUID for that user object, and I'll combine that with some other information, and then I'll move that and create that source anchor in our Azure AD service. So once that's done, every time a user goes to, you know, do an authentication request via an Active Directory, an ADFS service or something like that, then that source anchor is used as the primary key for that user to identify that user and make sure it's getting authenticated against the right user account back in that Active Directory on-premise. So absolutely important. And when you're looking at multi-forest scenarios, there is a chance that, and if you're looking at consolidating, there is a really small chance, but there's a chance that GUID can be, you know, replicated or the same across multiple forests. So typically when you're looking at a multi-forest scenario, you actually need to go through and define what that unique source anchor is. So in some instances it might be, you know, an employee ID or something like that. So you can define a different attribute other than GUID as a source anchor. So that, you know, and that's why MCS gets engaged typically in those really complex multi-forest scenarios, because we need to start looking and defining those types of things. But it's all extremely doable. The next concept is user principal name. So quite often users aren't aware of their user principal name. They're logging in using a NetBIOS namespace, so, you know, domain/username. When you start using online services, you really need to educate users to start knowing what their user principal name is, because when they're authenticating outside of the organisation from a workstation that's not domain joined, they need to know their user principal name so that they can actually authenticate. Typically, that's their email address, so it's not a big leap for users to understand that. Secondly, the user principal name needs a namespace that's routable. So quite often, I talk to customers and they've implemented an Active Directory, and the user principal name is configured to, you know, toby.knight@microsoft.local or something like that. So they've used a .local namespace to refer to an on-premise Active Directory. So the end result of that means that namespace isn't routable. So you need to go through a process of verifying, you know, running their readiness tool, verifying that you have routable UPNs, verifying that you own that namespace in the cloud, and then that authentication process can line up as well. Yes, you can have multiple namespaces, yeah. A user can't have multiple UPNs. A user has a single UPN. Yeah, you can have multiple, yeah. Yep. You can have subdomains and you can have completely separate namespaces as well.
And that's one key thing as well for ADFS, because you can deploy ADFS as a single domain or multi-domain. There's a multi-domain switch that you'd use when you're going to have multiple UPNs, because you're authenticating to one namespace. Say, like, I use sts.resolutionloud.com.au. If you don't want to deploy multiple ADFS servers for each domain, you'd deploy ADFS in a multi-domain setup deployment.
And you can even get more complicated than that. So you can have multiple namespaces and multiple separate namespaces, but you can choose which namespaces are federated. So I could have, you know, apac.microsoft.com as a federated namespace, and then have emea.microsoft.com as an online-only namespace. So you can split it up that way as well. So UPN is really key. And once it's implemented, and once the user's licensed, you can't change the UPN by updating the user's UPN attribute on-premise in the AD. You need to change it. So if they're, you know, they change from, you know, you get married or change their maiden name or change their name for whatever reason, or you change, you know, you go through a reorganization and you rename the company, then the way you need to do that is through a PowerShell command. That's because it was pretty subtle before, but the Active Directory So the Azure AD service is the core to all of our cloud services. But then that, all the other services like Exchange Online and Link Online and all those services pull information from, you know, that service, from that directory service. So if I went and changed a UPN and it was updated in the Azure AD, then all of a sudden that user wouldn't be able to access their Exchange email account, for instance. So using the set MSLO principal commandlet means that those services are aware that the UPN's been changed and they all get updated in the right order. So the other directory core concept is hybrid service deployment. So we touched on that. Really, to enable hybrid, and to do it effectively, you don't have to, but to make the experience seamless to the end user, you really want to look at enabling write back so that we write back those seven attributes to the end users. And we talked about the workflow process that kicks off the validation process. And, you know, one of the reasons why UPN or an object gets rejected is that we only enable UPNs that are verified by an organisation for the DirSync user. So, for instance, you know, if I'm working at organisation ABC and I've set my UPN to Microsoft.com, so you know I've got a bunch of users that are on Microsoft.com, you clearly haven't proved that you own Microsoft.com, so we'll actually reject that user. We'll create the user. However, we'll construct a default UPN which will use the on Microsoft namespace. So you've got to make sure that before you do your DirSync, effectively that you've verified all the namespaces that you want users to be associated with up in the cloud. And the same with proxy addresses. We do the same thing there as well.
Well, all this gets sort of, if you run that desktop readiness tool, all that gets, you get informed of all that in that deployment tool in the report.
Yeah. So the reason why the DirSync fails typically is from the duplicate proxy addresses. So, you know, multiple users with the same email address, UPN values as well, and also the namespace that hasn't been verified. And the way you know, so when a DirSync runs, you nominate some administrators and they get emailed the report. So you get, every time a DirSync runs, if there's any failures, the administrators get notified that. But again, it always comes back. When you're looking at identity, and really it's really key to the success of this kind of adoption of these services is being ready and making sure your identity platform is ready. So, you know, do things like run the deployment readiness toolkit. When you engage with Microsoft, we go through a process and we help you, you know, make sure you've done all these types of things. But, you know, so we've got a pretty mature process in place to make sure that you're successful as well. We've talked about soft matching. So basically, you know, the process is if the user object exists, if it doesn't exist, it gets created as long as it, you know, meets the initial pass through and verification process. If it does exist, then we go through a soft match process or the hard match process. So we look at the SMTP address and things like that. We've talked about the DirSync quota. And initially the default is 50,000 objects. If you want to go beyond 50,000 objects, so there's no theoretically limit around the amount of objects you can have in the tenant. However, if you want to go do a sync beyond 50,000, run the readiness toolkit, get the output, and then raise a service request and you'll get notified that that's okay to do. We throttle sync, but it gets queued, so you know you don't really need to consider that. But the initial DirSync may take a little bit of time. So if you've got photos and things like that as one of your user attributes, you know, then that can take some time. If you've come off BPOS, you'll notice that we've upgraded. You had to install a new version of DirSync. So for Office 365, there's a new version, and there's some minor differences between the two versions. One of the real challenges has been with DirSync. So I don't know if any of you experience this, that you may accidentally delete a user account on premise. So the next time you do that sync, the user account actually gets deleted from the Azure Active Directory service. So then that user effectively can no longer access their email and things like that. We retain that data for, you know, the retention period, 30 days or whatever, depending on the service you're looking at. In the past, there hasn't been a mechanism of recovering that user without raising a service request and getting Microsoft IT support to do that. So we're implementing a new feature, which is called soft delete, effectively. So effectively what that will do is if you delete an object or user object from your AD and it, you know, gets removed from your from the service within the Office 365 or the Azure AD, to actually do that, all you need to do is manually recover the user object, so pull it out of the recycle bin or something like that from on-premise. Once you've done that, the next time it does a dir sync, it'll basically do a soft match and then recreate the object. So we're calling this feature soft delete. And I'm not sure if it's been implemented yet within the APAC data centers. If it hasn't, it'll be implemented very soon. So I actually haven't tested that, but that feature's coming very soon. And that'll, you know, ease a lot of administration pain that some users have had in the past. The second biggest issue that your questions that I get asked are around filtering sync. So if you're doing a pilot, for instance, or a proof of concept, and you've got 100,000 objects, you may want to, you know, synchronize a subset of those initially, or even if you're, you know, going to production and you may have a single forest, but you may have multiple organizations, so namespaces, that are part of that, and you may only want a subset of your business actually consuming the Office 365 service initially, for example. So a question quite often get asked is, you know, can you actually achieve that? In the past, we've told you that you can't filter sync. Now you can filter sync, which is a good thing. So you can actually filter on objects, and the way you do that is, you know, you look at the dir sync. There's some instructions on, if you go to there's some wiki and some instructions on how to configure this. But you can basically sync on OU, on namespace, or a user attribute. So if there's something unique about that user, then you can filter on that as well. You can't actually filter on attributes, though. So you can filter on objects, an attribute for an object, but you can't, for instance, have a subset of attributes synchronized to the cloud. So, for instance, you know, if I'm a user and I've got a last name, first name, and all those kind of things as user attributes, I can't choose just to sync my first name. I have to sync first name, last name, and those type of things. So, yeah, we don't support that, and there's some documentation there. So that's available now, which is a great outcome. So that's pretty much it for the session today. So we're hoping that you're happy about the new things that are coming. The multi-forest support is great. You know, the soft delete capability and, you know, the multi-forest support in the two mechanisms and some of the other things we talked about. But I hope we've given you a base level understanding of what type of solutions to put in place and when to start looking at specific options around the provisioning and synchronization services. So we'll open up to questions, or if you just would like to come down after. Yeah, I'm not aware of the timeline for supporting the server 2012.
If you look on the Office 365 portal where you've got all the actual knowledge base articles, that's updated really regularly. As soon as it hits there, you actually can subscribe to a lot of those RSS feeds. So any of those ones that do change a lot, there's an RSS feed at the top right, just subscribe to that and you'll be notified as soon as it's supported.
Yeah.
Log a service request. See if you can get something from support.
Yeah, question up there. Yeah, so it would be based on the retention period of the service. So, for instance, we would we can recover a deleted mailbox for 30 days. So the soft delete would be based on that retention period.
I'd say, for example, though, just the synchronization is turned off.
Yeah, so if synchronization's turned off...
You mean in the portal or just turned off on-prem?
Yeah.
Because that transfers source of authority back to online.
Yeah. So there's two things. So if you turn off dir sync completely, we transfer source of authority back online. So that means if you delete an object, you have to delete it from the Office 365 portal. Yeah.
It would do a soft match.
Does a soft match, yeah. No, no, no. Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yep. Sorry? Yep. Yeah, we have trial tenants. So you can set up a trial tenant, configure all this against a trial tenant, which is a fully supported tenant. It's just a limited number of users and typically an expiration on it.
25 users normally.
We can get them extended though, based on the customer and the requirements there. But again, you just raise a service request, but typically you'd be working with someone from Microsoft and you'd get them involved to extend that. Yeah, up there. Yeah.
Yep. Existing users will be cached. So if you're already authenticated and you're already online, you can be cached for, I can't remember, I think it might be a few hours. I can't remember exactly how long it is, but you are cached. Well, you'll be connected still, but any new authentication requests obviously won't connect. Yep. If you look on the ADFS support portal, I should tell you. I think I'm pretty sure it's like 8 hours, but don't quote me on that.
Yeah, so I'd probably look at application federation. So there's two ways. So if it was just link information, for example, you could set up link federation between the two organisations. If it was SharePoint, you can actually invite external organisations to come in and they just use a live ID. Or if they've already got an ID, they can use their office.
This is two separate tenants.
So you could do it that way. Do they, if they've got separate tenants and they all have Azure AD user accounts, they can use that. You can use that to invite users. But if you come into the stand tomorrow, I think we probably need to have a longer conversation about what you're trying to achieve there. Yep. Yeah. Yeah, it is, yeah. So DirSync is just FIM, yeah. Yeah, a lot of users do. What I talked about today is supported scenarios.
Mm.
Yeah, yep. Yeah. So you can actually write your own. A lot of people have written their own FIM management agent that are doing their own sync at the moment as well. So we don't stop that kind of stuff, but this is really cookie kind of stuff that is if you log a call, it's supported.
I mean, DirSync does filter out like system objects, some basic filtering now as well, like guest accounts, that sort of thing. So, and there is third-party management agents, like I know MeshOps got a DirSync filtering tool, all that sort of stuff, but like Toby said, they're unsupported.
Yeah, like it's not complicated. Hmm. And there's a lot of partners that do it. You just, it's just one of those things that if you're really up support, they're going to ask you what you've done, how it's configured. And as long as if you've done enough due diligence or you get Microsoft to implement it or something like that, then it'll be supported. But it's just really a question of support. We're just giving you options that are fully supported.
We do it internally and we do it for clients as well that request it. But we obviously let them know it's unsupported.
Yep. Okay, just in the front. No, I don't know timings on that. It's soon. Yeah. If you come to me tomorrow, I'll try to find out overnight. Does, yeah. Yeah, I agree. Yeah. Yes. Yeah.
There's no penalty, but the way that Microsoft, they actually get reports, right? So they get reports on the service and how often it's actually synced as well. They will batch you up. So if you're syncing every 3 hours and you're syncing a lot of data, or you're doing manual syncs or using PowerShell or Vim, they will go in and go, okay, we'll batch you up. We're not going to let you go and just smash AWS front ends and make it a poor experience to everyone else. So your data will get there. It'll just probably be more logical batches rather than just one big hit into the environment.
So what I mean is trickle.
Yeah, yep, yep. We'll put in the batches and we'll just warm it up, yep.
Yep. Oh, lots of questions, yep. At the back.
Yeah. Yeah, so it's not, you can't put it in production, but it's an offering that's in, what they're calling it, customer preview or something like that. So you can test it today. And then I'm not sure on timings on that one, when that's available, but it's relatively soon as well. Yes. Not for the initial sync. You need to sync the whole directory. Yeah. Yeah, just down the front. Yeah, I'm sure there is. I'm surprised by that because we, for the Live at EDU platform, the transition process from Live at EDU to Office 365 is actually breaking the Live at EDU and having the same namespace, or same name across both platforms, so the user can get access to SkyDrive and things like that. It's interesting. I'd probably be raising a service request around that because that should be okay.
Because we're an Office 365. My account's a Live ID and an Office 365 ID. And I can log into either services as well. Because Live ID and online ID are separate.
Yeah, they're separate things. So.
Oh, okay. So it might be like a portal issue. So you're talking about like an EA portal or something, for volume licensing portal or something like that?
Yeah, we've got some really great Office product guys on the stand in the showcase. We're actually having a conversation around that yesterday. It'd be worth coming down and I can introduce it to some of the guys. Well, you know, clearly, you know, that'd be great, yeah. Yeah, just at the back.
Sorry, say that again. Group.
Groups are still necessary. So you use them for distribution lists and things like that, but also to access to services within. So you know you would you may have a SharePoint site or different sites. So you would assign group membership to this and access control around groups. Yeah, so effectively that group would get replicated up into the AD, the Azure AD service. Then that group can then be assigned as a security realm against a SharePoint online service.
Because when you go into SharePoint permissions, you'll see like tenant groups, you'll see your directory, you can see different options as well. So you'll see groups across.
Yep. Thank you.
If I have an issue, I suppose yours is incremental. Every now and again, you have an issue. Like I normally run a PowerShell one and use Verbose if you get any issues and put a log file or event logs. I don't know in the latest version of Dersing, there is actually an agent. You can run as MIS agent in Dersing, actually a GUI, to actually look in the FIM connector, and you can see what's been synced and what hasn't been synced and how many objects were changed and synced up to the cloud. I don't know if it gives you any errors on such. I'm just looking there now, any errors or such actually in the... what didn't come across? Are you getting this a lot?
Yeah, I'm not aware of anything additional, but we can find out. Yep.
Is there any time frame around two-way sync between Link and SharePoint Online as well? I know it's mentioned Tech USA in the year, but it hasn't been mentioned since.
So what do you mean by that?
You mean like so photos and all that sort of stuff, all those extra tributes?
Yeah.
Stuff in my site.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah, I hear it a lot. I haven't heard anything.
No, I haven't heard anything.
Every time I ask these sort of questions, then the next wave. Right, so the next wave is very soon. All the exchange on products, SharePoint, next year I'm talking about. So it probably more product issue rather than a, look, it's getting redeveloped all the time, right? Every 3 months you see updates come out. So hopefully, because I suppose to give an insight into how Microsoft roll out updates and products, they listen to partners, customers, and internal Microsoft. So they have the top 10 lists, and they go to engineering on those 10. Okay, that's how feature sets rolled out. So make a fair bit of noise, talk to, you guys are signed, Microsoft assigned, you got your Premier Engage, you got TAM, yep, talk to your TAM. Send them, look, this is what we want to see. Your TAM will follow it up and send it on. Yep.
But again, I would take the opportunity to come down to the showcase, and because the product guys are there, and they may be able to answer that question for you. I haven't heard of anything, though. Yeah, like we for the Office 365 service, we have a 12-month roadmap. That kind of capability will be included in that 12-month roadmap. So any changes to that platform will be included in that. So I should be coming out to you and giving you that 12-month roadmap. So you should get at least 12 months notice on when there's going to be changes in that platform. And you'll also get notified via email and things like that. Is that what you're asking? I'm not sure. Okay, so you're talking about the actual... Yeah, okay, so yeah. So they're working on things like... they're working on that kind of capability. So basically they're working on auto-update of those components.
Yeah. Just on your last question, what about your Dersync, there is actually a service manager. So that's actually available. If you look in your under the Dersync directory, Sync Bus Synchronization Service, and the UI Shell MSI client, that takes you step by step on what actually Dersync is doing and what was failed and what was success. Yep. Oh right. Okay. Yeah, that's probably something not on your client end. It might be on Office 365 end, log a service request. Yeah, that's the only way we can find it. If it's all successful here, is that what's happened? You get success, it's all fine here. But it could be also how many changes you're doing. If you're doing, how big is your environment? How many users do you have? If you have a high changeover, I see there's a lot in very large environments, I'm talking like 10, 20,000 objects. If you have a lot of changes every time you have a sync cycle, not all those changes will go across in that sync cycle, so it might be batched up. So you might find if you wait maybe half an hour, or the next sync cycle, does it appear? And does it go across in the next sync cycle, or it just doesn't go across at all? So you've got to go into the object in your ID.
Okay.
Wow.
Yeah. All right, guys, so we're out of time. So thanks for coming today. I hope you enjoyed the session. We'll be on the stands tomorrow from 9 o'clock. So if you have any questions, come down, and happy to introduce you to some of the product guys and, you know, hopefully answer some of the questions that you have. Thanks very much. When I'm nervous.